Hello and welcome to Guy Perryman Interviews. Our travel companion today is Jose James, a jazz artist for the hip-hop generation, singer, songwriter, and all-round cool dude who was in Tokyo in May 2024 to talk about his new album, 1978, inspired by his birth year and all the amazing music of the era. The conversation took place at the InterFM studio, Hanzamon, Tokyo, and was first broadcast across Japan on my InterFM radio show. Enjoy the journey. It is wonderful to welcome back on board Jose James. Hello.
Hey, man. Great to be here. Great to see you.
Great to see you back in Tokyo. Welcome back.
Thank you so much.
Here we are in the studio again. I was just thinking a moment ago, I think it's about the third time we've met up together here in the studio, but thanks again for your time today.
Third time's the charm.
You're here in Tokyo. No live shows this time, I believe. So they're just making you talk a lot, I guess.
Yeah, you know, just wanted to come and check in with everyone and talk about the new album. And it's been getting so much love here, which I'm eternally grateful for.
Well, it is such a beautiful album right in front of me here, 1978. What a great year.
Right?
you were born a good year.
I think so. I think so.
Reading all the notes you've talked about this album and that period of music, and I won't name check all of them because there's so many. I've done a short list here, but Marvin Gaye, Prince, Stevie Wonder, Quincy Jones, Roberta Flack you mentioned too. I mean, yeah. The music that was happening in the 1970s and early 80s, but particularly you're talking about 1978. Why was music so amazing then? And also you're talking about how the soul, the jazz, disco, rock,
right.
It was just all coming together.
It was all coming together. I think it's kind of it was like the last era of the band in a way. You know, before we moved into the 80s with drum machines and the robots started taking over a bit. You know, it's really a throwback to a different time where whether it was punk or reggae or funk or, you know, pop rock, whatever, jazz, it was all about the band, capturing the band in the studio, going to see the live show, having a great time, and musicianship. And that's what I wanted to capture on this album. You know, we tracked together in one room, live to 2-inch tape, the same way they did in the 70s. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. I read that this is right. You did a show in New York. You had a live show and you realized the band you were with.
That's right.
Was so amazing. You're like, I got to get these guys in the studio.
That's right.
And that's what happened?
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. You know, there's a certain magic and chemistry that is rare. And it just happens sometimes, you know, with a certain combination of musicians. And we all started looking at each other like, are you feeling this? Are you seeing this? And it was so good that we said, oh, we have to capture this. So, and I'd been working on songs for 5 years at that point, and I was definitely ready to record. So I just was waiting for the right band and the chemistry, and there it was. Yeah.
When you were writing and thinking about this music, were you thinking about a band? Did you have this kind of image in your head, like a sound image of what you wanted?
I had an idea of the sound, but I didn't know who could pull that sound off. You know, I love Off the Wall, Quincy Jones and Michael Jackson, and I Want You, Leon Ware with Marvin Gaye. Those were kind of like my focus points on the sonic. But yeah, I was like, nobody plays like that anymore, you know? So, and then I found some guys who do, you know, and in New York, I was so grateful. Yeah.
You got synths on here. Speaking of Quincy Jones and
that
album.
Yeah. Yeah. I wanted it to feel like if Leon Ware and Jay Dilla made an album for me. So I wanted it to feel like not retro, an homage, but not looking backwards. You know what I mean? It's less about recreation and more about celebration. Yeah.
How do we keep I'm not a musician and I wish I was, but how do we keep generally in for music lovers, that musicianship and that level of musicianship alive, do you think? With so many people now just making music in the bedroom, which is a great thing. It makes me think back to the 70s with punk as well, where you'd grab a guitar and a drum and go and record in your mate's garage. And it's similar now, and I love that ethic. But at the other end of the spectrum, amazing musicianship. I guess people are still going to music school. People are still really studying.
They are, you know, and I think there's a whole new generation of musicians who are really into it, you know, like Snarky Puppy and these kind of guys, Jacob Collier, they've kind of inspired a whole new wave of kids who are like, oh, it's cool to play in a band again, you know? So that's nice to see, you know? And I think it's a mixture, you know, I mean, full disclosure, I pre-produced every track on the album with Ableton, played beats using MPC because I wanted that feel. And then we translated that with a band. So it's kind of like the best of both worlds. And I think, you know, nowadays you have to be fluent in both. I think it's important. Yeah.
But then again, going from your home studio or your bedroom to a studio full of amazing musicians, yeah, that must be so much fun, you know, just working with other people.
It's cool. It's cool to walk into a place like Dreamland and they have like 200 different guitar amps. You know, they have like vintage synths from the 70s, from the 80s. And it's just, you're just like a kid in a candy store. Like, what do I want to use? You know, they have like four different Fender Rhodes. And, you know, it's really special that places like that still exist and that they have a tape machine, which is very rare these days.
Right.
Yeah.
Is New York City full of amazing musicians? Do you think you've just done a whole run of shows at Blue Note in New York?
It is. You know, the funny thing is that half of them moved, including me, to LA. So we're still in the States at least. But New York is full of like a new younger generation of musicians, like Jairus Yokley, who's on drums. And he's kind of the older of those. I think he's like 27. There's a whole new wave, like Julius Rodriguez and these kind of kids who are like early 20s.
Wow.
And they're sort of taking over Brooklyn and New York now, which is cool.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah. Samara Joy, too. Oh. She's, what, 22? So it's a whole new wave, you know, and that's it's kind of their New York now.
How about obviously LA is full of incredibly talented people.
Yeah.
You're enjoying that, too.
It's been great. It's honestly been a nice change, you know, a little sun, driving around. I don't think I could have made this album if I wasn't living in LA. There's more open sky, palm trees, like a breeziness to it.
And does that affect the music? Do you think?
It really does. I didn't think it would, but it really does. There's something about, just like getting in the car for like a long drive and seeing the mountains. I'm in Pasadena, so it's the east side. And just relaxing. It's like a closer to nature in this interesting way.
You call yourself a jazz artist for the hip hop generation. And again, as you were saying a moment ago about fusing all these different sounds and music styles together. What a beautiful way to sum yourself up in the 21st century, I think.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I mean, I never looked at jazz as like a living in the past thing. I always heard it and saw it as something cool, something that will move the culture forward. I don't think there's any other style of music that can absorb and embrace other styles of music. You know, it's pretty cool. Like, I don't think it's absorbed punk yet, but maybe somebody will do that.
It could do that. Someone will. I remember, you know, the first time I heard hip hop in whatever, early 80s, and I immediately thought this is the jazz of the day.
That's just, right.
You know, the words, the rhymes, the hip hop, the rapping was jazz.
That's right. That's right. It's just that spirit, that concept, you know?
Yeah. Freestyle. So mad libbing. Your mad lib.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
You know, there's you're talking about like the scratching thing?
Yeah.
And
also you're doing scatting as well.
Yeah. It's kind of like my contribution to vocal jazz, I think. I'm not like a great traditional scat singer, you know, like I wanted to be, but it's not really my thing. Oh. But hip hop is my language, you know, so I started, actually Toshio Matsura did a album. It was for Blue Note Records and there was a night in Tunisia. And I remember there's that famous break where Charlie Parker did like the solo break and I was scatting and stuff and nobody was really kind of responding to it. So I just did like a scratching thing, night in Tunisia. And everyone was like, whoa, that's so cool, you know? And then when the record came out, everyone thought that Toshio was scratching me, but it was like, no, he just did that, you know? So that was the beginning of it back in, I think 2009 or something. And I kind of kept it in there. Of course, Giles Peterson had me cover Freestyle Fellowship's Park Bench People. And it's kind of evolved into this, I don't know what to call it, like a half spoken word, half scat, half turntablism. That's kind of become my signature thing. So I try to mix in different songs like a DJ, like, and keep it in my head, which is weird, but DJs would get it. Like I have like one song playing and then the other one I'm scratching and I go back and forth between them. Like it's a deck.
Oh, yeah. I love that. Is it spontaneous or are you thinking about things?
Totally spontaneous.
Really?
Every time it's totally spontaneous. If I think about it, I can't do it. But if it just happens.
It's like climbing downstairs or something.
Exactly.
You just
exactly.
Like miss a step.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. You don't think about it. Exactly.
Oh.
Yeah.
What goes through your head when you perform live? I love asking musicians. I interviewed a dancer recently and she explained how she just goes off. She doesn't know where her head goes. But when you're performing, this must be an amazing feeling.
It is amazing. You know, it's what does go through my head? On a good day, nothing. On a good day, I just let go and just completely, I'm in the moment. I'm like zen. I'm like right there. If the band isn't having the best day, then I focus on the things that are going wrong. And I hate that, you know. The funny thing is that the audience can't tell either way. It sounds great either way. It's just you're in your head.
Yeah.
But I try to find like the zone where I don't think about anything and I can just express some emotion, you know, that's the best. Yeah.
Do you love performing live?
I do. I do. Yeah. It's my favorite thing to do.
Oh,
you know,
yes.
It's, yeah, I don't think I'll ever stop.
Please don't. I'm looking at your website. So many dates coming up. There's Europe. Roddy Scott's in London.
Yeah.
Must be a fab place to play.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing place.
Do you do two shows a night there?
Two shows a night. It'll be two nights. So yeah, four shows.
Right.
Yeah. It's, I'm very lucky. You know, I think live music is such a special, unique thing. And I know there's a lot of like worry about AI in different sectors, but I think it really can't recreate the human experience, no matter what. I'm not scared of it. I know a lot of people are like, I'm scared of it. It's like, no, I think it's fine. It does what it does. And I do what I do. And that's it. You know, there's something incredible. I mean, I saw Michael Jackson when I was 10, I was there for the Bad Tour in Minneapolis, which was absolutely life-changing. Mm-hmm. I've never forgotten that moment.
Wow.
Where he threw his hat off at the end of Smooth Criminal and everyone reached out for the hat.
Mm-hmm.
What, 30,000 people in the stadium, including me, reached out for the hat. And I was like, wow, this is the power of music. And that lesson, when I was 10, has stayed with me the whole time. You know, like, no matter what kind of day anyone's having, if they put on a great song, whether it's live or a record, it can change your whole feeling, you know, your molecular structure. I put on Stevie Wonder. I can't be mad. You know what I mean? If I'm having a bad day, I put on Stevie Wonder and my life is great, you know?
You mentioned when you're 10 years old when you see Michael Jackson.
Mm.
Was there someone or something in your really early life that got you on your musical journey?
I loved Prince. You know, Prince, I'm from Minneapolis, so Prince, Purple Rain was like huge, 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 huge. But Michael, you know, like every kid probably back then, I wanted to be Michael Jackson.
Can you dance like him?
I tried to. He was my idol, you know, and I think he kind of started me thinking about performing. But to be honest, I never really thought I would be an entertainer. I thought I'd be a novelist. You know, literature was my first love. And I was a voracious reader and writer. And so I thought, oh, I'll be, you know, English professor and a writer. I know it's hard to imagine now.
I don't know, but I love reading your lyrics and your writing because you can tell there's a lot going in there.
Oh, thank you. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of the best of all worlds because you have the performance, you have the music and the literature in that form. I'm also writing a book actually about jazz singing right now called The Future of Jazz Singing.
Oh.
Yeah.
The future of jazz singing.
The future.
Even
I don't think
better.
It's been updated since the 80s. Really, you know, there's a lot that's happened from, say, Bobby McFerrin to now.
Mm.
So it's it features interviews with Samara Joy, Kurt Elling, Diane Reeves, people like that. And then there's some of my philosophy and some of my story, you know, touring with McCoy Tyner and all these jazz greats and meeting Anita Baker. And it's some cool stuff in there.
I'm
you know?
Sure. When are we likely to get to read it, do you think?
Probably not for three years or so. I'm still writing it. The hard thing I realized finally is that writing a book takes a long time.
Right.
Yeah.
Longer than a song.
Exactly. Exactly.
Do you say everything you want through your music? Do you want to use your music as a platform to say, and obviously you're communicating to people, but is there something you really want to say and does it come out through your music, do you think?
That's a great question.
Or do you save other things you want to say for other mediums like writing a book?
That's a great question. I think that's a really good question. I think I say everything that I can say through music. You know, I haven't enjoyed everything that I've tried to do. There are a lot of songs that no one will ever hear. Like for The Dreamer, I think we had 28 songs and we used 10.
Wow.
You know, and I recently went back to listen to the other ones on the hard drive and I was like, oh, these are pretty bad. You know, the other ones are like, I was like, is there something I missed? I was like, no, these are the right ones. And the other ones were pretty terrible. But I think it is important to express it, but the curation and the editing, that is the important part. Not every song is great and not every song will resonate with people. To me now, the mark of a good song is, does it resonate with other people? I actually just did, which surprised my fans. I ranked all my albums and they were like, whoa, that's kind of cool. And they were surprised by why I ranked them. And a lot of people asked the lower ones, like, did I think they were not as good? And I said, no, I think they're really good, but they didn't connect in the way that I hoped. So for me, that's part of the value of a thing. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a reason why we still look at Pablo Picasso. There's a reason why Monet is still important, because you see it, you know, a little kid sees it and they're like, wow. Mm. And I think there's something to that. You know, it's not just like, you know, popularism. It's like, no, it still has the same impact generations later.
Yeah. I think about that all the time as an artist. Do you think about entertainment or do you think about it? You're talking about connection or just about honesty to the listener. It must be a challenge in some ways. Do you ever have to think about the audience at all or do you not worry about it too much?
I think about them a lot now. You know, I think during COVID, you know, I had a lot of time to think about what kind of performer I was going to be on the other side. And I think I decided, you know, to put away a lot more ego and say, you know, I want to be of service to my fans, to humanity. And I think that's a noble pursuit, not to sound completely full of myself, but I think it's a noble pursuit to say, yeah, I want to uplift people. And it really was singing Bill Withers music because it's just pure sunshine. You sing a song like Lovely Day or Lean On Me, you can't, you can't come to it with any artifice or any sort of like cynicism, which my generation, Gen X, is like full of cynicism, you know? So to go to Lean On Me, it's like, wow, you have to be really kind of pure of heart to sing those words. Mm. And it changed me. I did that project for 2 years. And at the end of it, I was like, oh, I want to write a song like Lovely Day. I want to have a song which turned into like Saturday Night, something really fun, playful, that makes people feel good, you know? Mm. And it's actually really hard to do, I found out.
Harder writing happy songs.
Exactly.
Right?
Harder writing happy songs than sad songs.
I've heard that. Yeah, a few people have said that.
Yeah.
You talked about the power of music earlier, and I always speak with people about the power of music. It's just a standard question on the list every time.
Yeah.
Obviously, music's got you through various things in your life, but when you were really young too, was it always music you turned to, do you think?
It was, you know, music and books. But I think books faded a bit because there's something so immediate about a song. You know, there's this 3 minute, 4 minute encapsulation of a complex human emotion. I remember when I was in high school and I was listening to all this like hip hop and rap and Nirvana and stuff. And then I discovered Billie Holiday and I said, oh, this woman understands heartbreak on a level that no one of my generation understands. So she was my counselor, my confidant, you know? And I learned a lot about not only jazz singing, but like, just like the human heart, but listening to Billie Holiday. I still go to Billie Holiday, you know, when I'm feeling like a little sad.
Oh, you do?
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. I have my go-to. So if I'm feeling like kind of spiritual, I listen to John Coltrane. Oh. When I'm feeling sad, I listen to Billie Holiday.
Does she lift your spirits or do you like to feel,
to wallow in it?
Wallow in it. Yeah,
no,
yeah.
It's almost like she acknowledges it and then she helps me transform it. I think that's what she kind of did in her life, you know, but she definitely had a hard life, you know, so to hear someone who had such a hard life on this planet transform it through song is so powerful to me. When I want to feel confident, I put on Frank Sinatra.
Oh, there you go. And try and sing like it.
Exactly.
He's my karaoke go-to. So.
Oh, which song?
That's Life.
Nice.
I think That's Life and This Town. This Town, which is kind of a dark.
That's a sophisticated choice. Yeah.
I'm an old geezer.
Hey, I love it. I love it.
Was it a musical household when you were young?
It was. You know, my mom was a real hippie, real flower child.
That's where it comes
from. That's where it comes from. Yeah, she had a real, pretty diverse taste in music. You know, I remember flipping through her vinyl as a kid, and it was like Earth, Wind, and Fire, then Peter, Paul, and Mary, you know, Roberta Flack and Bob Dylan, of course, Joni Mitchell, but like Ohio Players and stuff too. Oh. So it was kind of interesting what my mom listened to. A lot of classical music too, Stravinsky. So she gave me a good kind of wide range. And my dad is a musician. He plays tenor saxophone and Latin percussion, congas, timbales. So between the two of them, I had a really good foundation, you know. And I'm so grateful to have been born in the time I was because, man, it was like the golden era of hip hop. And it was so exciting. And I try to tell this to my students sometimes or young artists. It was like every week there was a classic album being released. Every single week, you know, and living through that era was like something I'll cherish forever. It just felt like the world is yours, you know, like Nas said, you know, little did we know, you know, that was the golden era. Yeah.
Well, you're keeping it alive,
yeah,
which is what you talk about too.
That's right.
About, you know, really trying to keep the spirit of that generation and that music alive too.
Absolutely. And I do think right now is like one of the most exciting moments in music history. I mean, there's incredible stuff happening every day, which is really cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you have performed with symphony orchestras too.
I have.
What do you love about that?
You know, it's the power, the imagination, the colors, it's staggering. It's one thing to listen on an album or even in a concert hall, but to stand on stage with them is shocking. You know, I did a tour with Laura Mvula down in Australia.
Yeah.
And that was incredible. And I performed with the Royal Concertgebouw in Amsterdam. It's a 100-piece orchestra, and that was, wow. Jules Buckley was the conductor and arranger.
Right, right.
And it's like life-changing, you know? It's like, it makes you, it's hard to go back to a 5-piece after you've had a 105-piece.
Right, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I also want to ask you too, it seems like incredible women have been important in your life, and I loved what you did with Erykah Badu and On and On.
Oh, thank you.
And that, I don't know, do you call it a tribute? How do you describe what you did? You're saying thank you to her for the music, keeping her music.
Yeah, I think it's like a tribute or an homage, you know. Well, it's funny, tribute is so I looked this up actually, because tribute's sort of like a payment you have to make, you know, and an homage is sort of like lifting something up that, you know, that you're celebrating something.
Good choice of words.
Yeah.
That's the writer in you.
She's so famous, of course, and she's so fabulous, but I still think in a way she's never gotten her due as a songwriter. Hmm. And it's funny, you know, there's people like her or like Elton John, David Bowie. They're so larger than life that you almost forget how talented they are in the fundamental level. Mm. And Erykah Badu, I think more than anybody, has done such a broad range of styles, and from avant-garde electronica to just straight up rap and, you know, and ballads, you know, there's like her catalog is very fascinating. And it was really, really hard to choose like 10 songs, but I did it. And I was so nervous that she wasn't going to like it. I said, this might be the end of my career if she doesn't like it and her fans hate it. I was like, well, let's see what happens. But she liked it. She DM'd me on Instagram and reached out and followed me. And I said, okay, wow, I'm okay.
You got a thumbs up from her.
Exactly.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
And Laura Mvula, another amazing woman in music. What a voice.
She's so incredible. Yeah. She's so incredible. She's like one of my favorite singers of all time. It's kind of interesting, you know, her and Samara Joy and like all these like singers are sort of arriving with these like full voices. They just sound like they just, you know what I mean? They don't need to like develop. It's just like, yeah, you've been here before. Mm-hmm. You sound like an old soul, you know? Mm-hmm. I love those kind of singers.
Mm-hmm. Inter FM's catchphrase is find your colors. Mm-hmm. We want people to find their color, become the person they want to be, live their life, diversity, gender, equality, etc. Mm. What would you say to someone who's trying to find their color, do you think?
I think it's already there. It's really about maybe like looking in the mirror. We don't really spend much time alone with ourselves, taking a look at who we are as a person. Where I was asking someone else, tell us who I am. I've done that too. Tell me who I am. Tell me who I am. Oh. Musicians or writers or critics or labels or the outside world. Mm. Tell me who I am to you. And it's like, well, that's important. But like, It was only recently I asked myself, well, who am I to me? Whoa, that's a big question. Mm-hmm. And when you find that answer, then you'll find your colors.
Love that.
Yeah.
You love writing, so I'm kind of curious what your answer is going to be to this question. If you could sit down and have a conversation with anyone from history or someone alive today, who would you love to have a chat with?
You know what? Mieko Kawakami.
Really?
Yeah. I'm a huge fan. And we're actually friends on Instagram. And she was supposed to come to my last concert, but she wasn't able to. I love her perspective. I love her writing. I understand she used to be a singer too. And I would love to chat about the different forms of expression, you know, because I think there is a connection between writing and performing, but I would love to hear about it from the writer side. Like, I think I could talk to her about the performing side and she could tell me about the writing side.
Well, if you're pals on Instagram, it'll happen.
It'll happen. Yeah, yeah. Yes.
Well, I have had such a wonderful time hanging out with you today, Jose James. Thank you so much for your time. Thanks for the music.
Thank you, brother.
And thank you for joining us today. For more interviews and information, please go to guyperryman.com.